This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Chicago's all-news station. News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Noon Business Hour, presented by Republic Bank of Chicago.
Coming up on today's Noon Business Hour, U.S. new home sales surged to a 12-and-a-half-year high. On Personal Finance Wednesday, how to improve your credit score quickly. Disney has a new CEO, and Amazon Go is on the move.
We'll get into that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour. Right now, a new report on home sales is out. Also, the Fed's keeping an eye on the coronavirus. To talk about that, we're joined by Bob Bruska, chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Bob, let's begin with coronavirus. How challenging is it for economists to make any sort of predictions, given the fact that we just don't know how this is going to go?
Well, that pretty much sums it up. Obviously, you can't make any predictions. You have no idea how this thing is going to spread, how bad it's going to get, how long it's going to stay around. All we can do is point to the risk that this virus is there and that it could have a severe impact on economic activity going forward. So it's a risk factor. That's all you can say. It's a risk factor.
Is the Fed sort of stuck here? Because the Fed, obviously, just like the rest of us, doesn't really know what's going to happen.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, they. I mean, you listen to the Fed people, and they're saying the same things. They're trying to be reassuring, but they don't know. They don't know what to do. And one of the Fed members has said he's not quite sure what Fed policy should be. Others have said they expect this to blow over and for policy to stay steady. But that's kind of a Pollyanna view. Maybe it's the right view, but it's a Pollyanna view. So, you know, the best thing to do is just admit, look, we just don't know. There's a risk factor out there. It's a substantial one. You want to know how bad it is? Well, look at the stock market. Look at the bond market. Look how they're behaving. That tells you what investors think. These are people that have money at risk, and they're telling you what they think, and what they're telling you is they're scared.
Bob, on the brighter side, new home sales. Wow, surging. What's going on there?
Yeah, very, very bright report. A lot of strength everywhere, but in the South. The South has some protracted weakness, but you've got a very strong bounce back in the West and strength in the Midwest. In the West, you could be seeing some rebuilding going on after all of those terrible fires that they've had. The Midwest looks like it's just, for now, it's a success story, and mortgage rates have been going down, and then they kind of plateaued, and now, of course, with this rally in the bond market, we're going to see mortgage rates go down again. So that could actually sustain this housing rally.
And a success in January. I mean, you might expect to see this maybe in April or May, but boy, January sales going up. Also, what is I'm curious as to what price range are the single family homes that are selling? What are they falling into?
Well, prices continue to rise, but what we know about the distribution of prices is that median prices are stronger than average prices, and that tells you that these are sort of lower-priced homes that are beginning to move. But you know, in terms of saying, you know, where the strength is, let's remember, all of these numbers are seasonally adjusted. And so these numbers are strong for this time of year. So in January, you have a seasonal effect that's going to kick anything a lot. So if you get a small increase in January, it's going to appear as a big increase because you don't expect it. So let's remember, we're dealing with seasonally adjusted data. And so I like to take the month kind of out of the picture. The main thing about it being January is weather is a big factor. So if you get an extra warm January, you're going to get more sales, and the seasonal factor isn't looking for it. And so the season will blow that out of perspective. So that's the main danger in the winter, is that you can get seasonally warm data that will cause something to read as a strong economy rather than warm data.
Thanks for the input, Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics out of New York. Amazon is being very aggressive with its foray into the grocery business. Let's get the latest from Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com. Phil, Amazon must see the smaller Go stores as successful, or is this just a case of, you know, bigger is better? Let's try that.
Well, Jennifer, in the case of Amazon, it's not only bigger is better or smaller is better. It's let's throw everything against the wall from a technology standpoint and see what hits. Keep in mind that Amazon is already successful with their retail environments. Now, that's Whole Foods, it's the Amazon Go stores, it's their bookstores, which posted last quarter a little under $4.5 billion. So they're already successful in this brick-and-mortar space. However, the thing that people don't realize when you're looking at an Amazon Go store is you've got to use that mobile technology, and you've got to use probably the most advanced mobile technology. So if you've got one of those flip phones, it's just not going to work, number one. Number two is when you use your mobile device to check in, they are tracking everything that you are buying. And while it's a lot of convenience not having to deal with a cashier, just being able to walk in, take a product out, most consumers are forgetting that now Amazon has a total history of what you're buying.
True. But also with the other stores, the traditional supermarkets, how do they compete with this? Because they have so much more staff than those Amazon Go stores.
Well, that's the problem, Jennifer, because it's $15 an hour minimum wage that's going throughout the country. We're seeing more supermarkets like Hy-Vee, for example, moving away from 24 hours because of that extra cost. Now, Amazon Go has come under a lot of criticism from the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union, that union that covers store employees. But Amazon's response is, we're paying $15 an hour. We're already paying more. We've already added over 500,000 jobs with everything that Amazon is doing. So it's really going to be whether or not this larger format, because a lot of the Amazon Goes, especially the couple in Chicago, haven't been very successful. They haven't been very busy. The one in Seattle that's part of their headquarters, of course that's busy because of all the Amazon employees that are in there. But we've got to really see whether or not that really small format works, or whether or not it's this larger format. They're calling it a neighborhood market, which is really interesting, since that's a trademark of Walmart, and that's Walmart's supermarket, foray. So, you know, what they're doing is they're moving away from the downtown business areas. They're moving into more neighborhoods. They're going to try to get those consumers.
And they really have to get people, first off, to embrace the technology. It just feels, it feels a little weird when you walk into a store and you walk out and there's no cashier process at all. It sort of feels like maybe you're being set up or something like that. But the sheer convenience in these stores, you do not have to wait in a line at all. And I have to believe that that's just going to be very, very popular.
Cisco, I think it is, but for a very small part of the population. Keep in mind that the cashier and the bagger, for those stores that still have baggers, is that last touch point. And frankly, when we're spending $100, $200 on a shopping trip, it's nice to have somebody say thank you in person and have that human contact. So I think for some people, it's about technology getting in and out of that store as quickly as you can. For other people, it's having a much more personal experience, so you can go up to that butcher, that you can ask for a special cut. Now, they do have meat, they have produce, they have poultry in these stores, but everything is prepackaged. You don't have those service departments. It's almost like an Aldi, but even less people than are in an Aldi.
Yeah, really fascinating developments. Thank you so much, Phil Lempert. We'll have you back again soon. Phil is founder of SupermarketGuru.com.
Up next, there's a change at the top at Disney.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Disney CEO Bob Iger is stepping down. He'll become executive chairman of the company until he retires at the end of next year. Former Disney Parks chairman Bob Chapek is taking over the top spot. Disney stock today down about 3.5% at $123.77. Let's get some details. Chris Palmieri is joining us, Los Angeles bureau chief for Bloomberg News. All right, Chris, well, we knew that Bob Iger was going to go, but it seems a little abrupt. What's going on here?
A little abrupt, yeah. This has been a sort of a soap opera we've been watching for years. In fact, there was another person designated a few years ago as president that everyone assumed was going to be the heir apparent, and he didn't last. You know, a lot of decisions on the part of the current CEO, Bob Iger, about when and how he was going to leave. But when it ultimately came down, it was kind of a shock.
And you do mention, I like the term soap opera, because it almost seemed like Iger knew he needed to go, but he didn't quite want to go and didn't know who should take over. And there was just this back and forth over a long time, and we don't see that with many companies.
Well, he worked out a very unusual situation for himself, where he gets to stay on as executive chairman. He's chief creative officer and for another 2 years till the end of 2021, while this other guy is basically doing all the nuts and bolts of running the company. And Iger gets to focus on the fun stuff.
So former Disney Parks chairman Bob Chapek is taking over at the top. What does he bring to the game?
Well, first of all, kind of a hometown hero. Grew up in Hammond, graduated from Clark High School there. Talks fondly about family trips to Walt Disney World in Florida when he was a kid. He's a 27-year veteran of the company and has run the parks business, the consumer products business. He was senior executive in the film business, ran their home video, and was responsible for, you know, DVD releases of classic movies and that. So he's got a lot of experience in different parts of the business.
So, Chris, what does this change say about Disney and the new focus?
Well, number one, it shows how they very much appreciate people who understand the Disney culture, this family-focused reverence for the brand and the history of Walt Disney, and also somebody who can execute financially. He's known as a very tough operator. He dramatically increased the ticket prices to get into the theme parks, and he reorganized consumer products to focus just on these big franchises like Frozen, and, you know, the financial results speak for themselves.
Is this a strategic time for a change? You got Disney Plus taking off?
Huge. And that's sort of, I think, why the stock reacted negatively today. It's down about 3%. So the whole future really has been bet on video streaming. They have this Disney Plus service they launched in November. And it's been very well received, more than 28 million subscribers so far. You know, everyone, you know, sees that as sort of the future of the business. And ironically, it's the one part of the company that that Chapek does not have experience.
Thanks so much for all of that information. Chris Palmieri, Los Angeles bureau chief for Bloomberg News.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being with us. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
The self-driving car of the future could bear a strong resemblance to your living room.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday this afternoon. We talked to an expert about ways to improve your credit score.
Chicago's Inspector General says a program designed to keep young people from becoming repeat offenders may be doing just the opposite.
And the Secretary of Health and Human Services is assessing efforts to contain the coronavirus in the U.S.
On Wall Street, the Dow is up 67, NASDAQ up 58, the S&P is up 11 points.
AccuWeather says flurries wrapping up for us here in Chicago this afternoon, but snow continuing south of the city and in northwest Indiana into the early afternoon with another inch or two. 30 at O'Hare and the Lakefront, 31 right now at Midway.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago.
Markets are riding a roller coaster today. We're joined by Michael Stritch, Chief Investment Officer, BMO Wealth Management. And Mike, it has been up, it's been down all day on Wall Street. What are your thoughts about what we're seeing here?
Great, thanks, and it's good to be back on the program. I think we've got a little bit of a relief rally today. You know, the last couple of days this week in general has been a turbulent one. And if you have a little bit of context, what we've done so far this year, the U.S. market was on a straight shot up. Non-U.S. markets, not so much, even as the virus started to spread in China, etc. Trouble overseas markets. The U.S. finally succumbed to a little bit of the spread outside of China earlier this week. So just digestion period right now. We'll see where it goes from here.
What kind of losses did we see at the close, after the close yesterday, and then what kind of gains are we seeing today?
You know, we were down about 6% or so, I think, over the two-day period on the S&P 500, and then we started up near a percent, I think, this morning. We've given some of that back, and I would expect that to continue more of this choppiness as the news flow develops and people get comfortable with the economic impact of the virus itself and just the general earnings season comes to a close.
And it doesn't look like right at this hour, I'm looking at it, the gold is, they're going to the safety. The gold you would think would be up, but it's actually down almost 0.5%. How about bonds?
Bonds have given back a little bit today as well, but you know we got some significant decline in interest rates this week down into the low 130s. And as I look at it real time right here, I think we're almost about flat on the 10-year again today, and that's after a big run we've had the past few days. So bond yields are plumbing really all-time lows in the U.S. right now.
So what do you do as an investor, given the fact that there's a lot of things going on with coronavirus and we just don't know where it's going to end?
Yeah, so I think, you know, what we've been encouraging folks to do, and it's important to talk a minute about where we started. You know, we've been a believer that the equity market rally would continue, that 2020 would be a good year for stocks in general. And with that as a backdrop, we're not changing our baseline stance there. But what we are encouraging people to reconsider for those, for example, that may have had significant gains in their portfolios from last year, could be a time to revisit a little bit of their longer term allocation if they're overweight equities relative to risk tolerance, maybe pare back a bit. And for those that really just can't stomach a lot of this volatility, because we do foresee more of this to come in the weeks and months ahead as the virus sorts itself out, we've recommended maybe reducing non-U.S. stocks, emerging markets in particular, and putting some cash on the sidelines. But our baseline view is transitory event. At some point here, we're thinking Q2 at this stage. It passes, and you have a lot of pent-up demand, a lot of stimulus in the system, gets to a bit of a snapback on the economy, and the market should benefit from that as well.
Let's talk about a couple of individual stocks. Let's begin with Lowe's. Talk about their report. We got the stock down almost 4% today.
Yeah, disappointing from Lowe's. I mean, they did beat expectations, but it was anywhere near what I think Home Depot produced earlier this week and just generally what people were expecting from the company. I mean, same-store sales were up about 2.5%, I think, again, comparing to Home Depot. And the idea is Lowe's is really trying to catch up to Home Depot and the success that they've had, because Home Depot has been knocking the cover off the ball, and they put up a 5% plus same-store sales print. And the story has really been maybe a mismanagement of some of the promotions they did around Christmas, but in particular, the online channel has been weak for Lowe's, and they're trying to redo the website. And just as a reference point, again, I think they had a 3% or so growth in online sales versus Home Depot up in the 20%. So they just haven't struck that balance quite right just yet.
I think even the CEO, Marvin Ellison, said that the website was outdated and they've been doing some work on that. Go ahead. What do you think about that, about his comment?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see the comment specifically, but there's no doubt, reading a lot of the analyst reports, talking to our team here, that they've stated that they need to redo their online platform, and it's something they're going to be working on right now. So we'll see how that goes.
Let's take a look at
the coming quarters.
Let's take a look at TJ Maxx. I mean, that really shot up there. What are they doing right?
Yeah, so you talk about can anyone beat Amazon or these other big retailers like Walmart, which seems to be the only place that success is having in a struggling retail environment in aggregate. TJ Maxx is another one that's been doing some fantastic things. I think in general sense, you know, they, at the end of the day, they provide a good value to the customer. You can get some really interesting items in their general sort of TJ Maxx, Marshall stores, as well as Home Goods, right under their umbrella. And they're able to actually pick off a lot of the excess inventory. We've heard from online channels as well. So if things don't sell, TJ Maxx comes in and gets a good deal, passes some of those savings on to the customer, and it's benefited their financial performance. Their margins were up, I think, 60 basis points or more in the last few years. So they've done a really nice job in that specialty retail category.
And obviously so much has gone online in retail, but it seems like TJX is showing that if you can provide a good value, if people can get things cheap and they can just walk in and walk out with whatever they want, you can still have some success here.
Yeah, that's good. It's a good value. It's a kind of an inventory that changes. They're able to pick up on trends, and they're not set to kind of one specific pattern in the stores, and they move that stuff around, and there's a bit of a treasure hunt in some of the in a home goods setting and the like. So they have some flexibility in the footprint within the stores, and they're able to get new inventory in as it becomes available from some of the bigger names like a Macy's or something that doesn't sell through for the Christmas season. They take that, mark it down, And lo and behold, people like to go in there and look for those kind of deals.
Thanks so much for the analysis. Michael Stritch, Chief Investment Officer at BMO Wealth Management here in Chicago.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, focusing on credit score. It can have a major impact on how your money is spent. Ted Rossman is joining us, industry analyst at creditcards.com. All right, Ted, if we had to point to one thing, the one thing that people should be most concerned with when it comes to credit score, what would that be?
Paying your bills on time. If you do that each and every time, that's the number one way to build a strong credit score.
And so it's when people have credit cards, a lot of times they assume they have to pay the whole balance off every month. That's obviously a good idea to save on interest. But as long as you're making that payment, you're doing okay.
From a credit score standpoint, all you need to do to remain in good standing is to make at least the minimum payment on time every month. As you said, you should be paying way more than the minimum, hopefully paying the entire amount if you can to avoid interest. But in terms of just avoiding late payments, the minimum is enough. There's a myth out there, though, which I hate, which is that you have to carry a balance to improve your credit score. That's definitely false. Way too many people believe that. The best thing you can do is to pay your credit cards in full and on time every month.
And when you say that about paying your bills off, one of the things my lawyer told me when I went to buy that first house was, whatever you do, do not be late on that mortgage payment, right?
Yes. A single late payment could trim about 100 points off an otherwise good score. It really can have a massive effect. Another big thing that people should be aware of is that you want to keep your debts low. And this is even on credit cards that you pay in full. There's something called your credit utilization ratio, how much credit you're using divided by your total credit limit. And it's usually reported on the statement date. So even if you pay in full, if you've made $4,000 of charges in the month and you have a $5,000 limit, you're using 80% of your available credit, which is a lot. So in that case, make an extra payment mid-month, knock that utilization down before the statement even comes out.
So what are some surefire ways to hurt your score, your FICO score? Too many credit cards? What else?
Paying late, maxing out cards, applying for too much credit all at once. That's another one where it's fine to get a new credit card once or twice a year, but you don't want to run up a whole bunch of applications all at once. That's going to make you look like a risky borrower. You mentioned the mortgage shopping example before. That's another time when you want to really be careful. You don't want to change your financial standing in any meaningful way when you're in that application process. Wait on the new credit card or the car loan until after the closing, because you don't want to do anything that could hurt your score and lead you to pay a lot more in interest on that hefty mortgage debt.
So those FICO scores range from 300 to 850. What is the minimum FICO score that you want? You must have at least that to be able to make things happen.
We usually look at something like 670 as being the border between good and bad credit. If you're above 740, you should get the best terms on all loans and lines of credit. There's really no benefit other than bragging rights to being an 800 versus a 741. But that 670 is a key threshold. If you're below 620, you're going to have an even harder time getting approved for credit cards and other loans. And if you do, you'll probably pay a lot higher interest rates.
So when we get above 800, just for fun, we should go ahead and pay something late?
That could send you right down to the basement real quick. It's one of these, like we say with stocks too, that you take the escalator up or maybe even the stairs up and you can take the elevator straight down. One 30-day late payment could really cripple an otherwise great score, so you've got to stay on top of these things.
Thanks so much. Good info. Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com.
Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday, and still to come, the melding of luxury and self-driving cars.
Because money matters, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
As the self-driving car evolves, expect to see more high-end features. We welcome Jeff Gilbert, CBS Auto reporter in Detroit. Jeff, how fancy might some autonomous vehicles be?
You know, let's skip over the technical hurdles and just assume autonomous vehicles are here. So car makers are trying to decide, how is that going to change how you interact with the vehicle? There's kind of the short-term solution where GM has shown this interesting robo-taxi where people face each other. And then there are long-term concepts that can show, you know, maybe a rolling office on wheels, something with comfy chairs. I've actually seen concepts where your windshield becomes a screen so you can watch a video in big screen, or maybe do a conference video with your office on the big screen. So there are all sorts of ideas being thrown around. Now we just have to get the self-driving cars to work.
And I'm curious as to what you've seen that has made you, I don't know, you could say jaw drop maybe, but you thought, wow.
Yeah, I mean, like anything else, there are things that might be totally absurd, but there are also things that are realistic. Because let's say it's 50 years from now and self-driving vehicles are everywhere. That may change when you want to drive. If you can sleep while your car is driving, then maybe you need some sort of cot in your vehicle, and maybe you don't need as many motels along the way. I mean, you start thinking about things like that, and it could theoretically change everything. But right now, the most interesting things I'm seeing are entertainment systems so that you can pass things away and pass the time away, and also more comfortable seating. But also, you have to be protective because you're still in a moving vehicle.
See, and you've touched on this, but I think it's important to talk about, because when people think autonomous vehicles, self-driving vehicles, the way that they're going to take off is if people feel like they can just hang out in that car, that they don't have to pay attention to anything. I mean, they want a couch, they want video games, they want a wet bar. You know, they want to be able to just relax while this car does everything.
Right, exactly. And then there are the other things that you have to think about. For example, some people do really great when they're behind the wheel, but they get car sick when they're on the passenger side. Or maybe if they drive backwards, like some people get ill on a train. So those are the things you have to think of. And you know, the earlier systems that are autonomous will be too expensive for individuals to buy, so they'll be kind of like robo-taxis. But if there's no driver, who's going to clean these things? Who's going to monitor these vehicles to make sure you're really not smoking in them when you're not supposed to? And who's going to sanitize them for germs? I mean, we've got the coronavirus scare right now, but every year we've got a flu scare or cold and norovirus season.
Jeff, these autonomous vehicles that have been shown off, I mean, are they expected to be some electric, all electric, mostly electric?
Early on, we'll have to have some electric because these are powerful systems that need electricity to run. So Ford is saying that their first autonomous vehicle will be hybrid. GM is just switching to electric. They're going to say that when they do this, their vehicle is going to be fully electric because, again, there are systems on there that take a lot of electricity to run. So it's a lot easier if the systems are electric, and particularly if they're a robotic taxi, because then you can measure how much they're being used and take them out of service to recharge when, you know, when the battery starts to drain down.
Thanks so much, Jeff Gilbert, CBS Auto Reporter. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, you can go to our stream. Just skip back to the time that you want to listen to. There's a pause and rewind function. It works online and with the radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.